You're listening to Alcoholics Alive, where recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous share their experience on how they live AA as a way of life. None of our participants get paid or speak for AA. Here are your hosts, Shank and Wayne. Shank, I feel like I need to remind everyone that Alcoholics Anonymous is a book.
We used to say that a lot in the first few seasons, I think.
We did say that a lot. The fellowship got its name from the book. So just a reminder out there, if you're curious as to what Alcoholics Anonymous is, it's actually a book. We want to just make sure everyone understands that. So thank
you for sharing.
You're welcome. Grateful to have our guest on today. Thanks for sharing. Is how I'm supposed to respond to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. He comes from Oregon. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Nick. My home group is Young at Heart. We meet on Monday nights at 389 Scale House Court, room 103. Very much a literature-based meeting. We do first Monday, step of the month. Second Monday of the month, we read out of the big book. Third, it's anything out of AA literature. Share on it for a bit and then go around and discuss. And the fourth is a speaker meeting. And the fifth, we just kind of shoot from the hip. Usually end up being just literature discussion. My sobriety dates, May 18th, 2015. My home group is in Bend, Oregon. So how do I get to AA? Luck of the draw, really. Honestly, I didn't have any experience of people telling me what AA was and what it's not. Which our topic into action today is going to get me leading into some of that. I think we're failing as a whole, as far as AA goes. But anyhow, I grew up in your average dysfunctional family, drinking, all the other stuff. Went to a bunch of high schools, moved around a lot, really enjoyed drinking. You know, I remember like one of the first times I got really hammered. Basically, I went to a party when I was 13, got home, you know, got here at 30. But we get a couple things in there. I remember on my 14th birthday, my stepmom or my dad's girlfriend, I can't remember what she was at the time, came home with a 6-pack of Budweiser and a pint of Southern Comfort. Last time I drank Southern Comfort, you know, I threw up all night. It's too sweet for my blood, but sweet. Yeah, it's just too sweet, man. I ended up being just a Jim Beam boy for a long time, but, man, it's that sense of ease and comfort. You know, I just loved every bit of it. I loved the party. Never liked much authority. My dad didn't pay attention much. I could get into life story, but that doesn't really matter. You know, like the fact is when I pick up a drink, I can't stop. And it got to the point pretty quickly where I was thinking about it all the time. In fact, I can't even remember since before I touched it that I wasn't thinking about it until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and got in the big book with a sponsor. I tried everything. To quit on my own. Everything you read out of more about alcoholism, even some illegal versions. I tried everything to not drink. Nothing worked. I just couldn't figure it out. The last time I was on a bender, quote unquote, I was house sitting for a contractor I was working for, and he was gone in England for like 2 weeks. And I went to his house and he had this little sickly dog, and the dog couldn't, you know, go on. You know, the reason I was there is to make sure the dog had medicine and this and that. But it wasn't an active dog, which was perfect for my active alcoholism, because I could just sit on the couch and I just drank his, cabinet down, you know, a couple times. You know, he had pretty, you know, pretty nice liquor cabinet, and I drank that thing down a couple times, kept refilling it. And the last night I was there, I remember looking at this bottle of Picardy. It was one of them plastic ones with a little handle and a little notch on the bottom, and I remember staring at that bottle, and I'm not a Bacardi guy, but it was the last thing there, right? And I remember staring at that notch, and I just couldn't, I told myself, I can't get to that, you know, I can't get down to that notch. I don't know why I said it. And I came to in the morning with that incomprehensible demoralization, you know, had pissed all over myself. And I went to that bottle and I was shaking like a leaf, and I got emotional, man. I didn't want to drink, but I had to drink just to try and feel normal. And there was years and years of that before, but this, for some reason, I hit that, I don't know what it was, like consequences never really got me sober, or got me wanting to be sober. But I think it was just the alcohol has stopped working. You hear that all the time. And for me, it kind of, I feel like it's true, because it just wasn't as fun anymore. You know, it was more like maintenance. Anyhow, I ended up reaching out to an aunt of mine who, she was a nurse. So that's like the only thing I could think about. And so I reached out to her. She got me into a treatment center. And I got very fortunate. I went to a treatment center that basically just drilled in my head, I needed to find a 12-step fellowship. And didn't tell me which fellowship to go to. Just, I needed to find a 12-step fellowship and get involved. So when I got out of that treatment center, I went to AA. However, I do believe that treatment center kind of sucked the hopelessness out of me, you know, because when I walked out of that 30-day treatment center, I felt pretty good. And I did go to AA, and I did get myself a sponsor right away. However, I wasn't all in, and it, quote unquote, I like I said, I wasn't as hopeless as when I walked into that treatment center. So I had one more night of drinking just to make sure. You know, I just had that question in my head. You know, it was a couple months later, and it was a good day. It was a beautiful day, right? A good day at work, sunny out. I went to a meeting that day after work, and I went home, took a shower, went out to get a burger and a beer, and ended up in a hotel, blacked out within a couple hours. And when I came to the next day, it was the first time I really felt guilty about what I had done, and was just baffled that it happened. You know, I reached out to my sponsor, and just like the story where the guy was in the hospital bed and that AA guy comes walking in and grinning, right? That was me. I called my sponsor and he's like, "Are you convinced yet?" And he's laughing at me for being in a hotel, just hurting. And I said, "Yeah," you know, and that's when I realized that, I had to do everything that was asked of me if I wanted to get sober. I didn't know AA was going to work, but I did know that if it didn't, I was going to end up dead. Yeah.
That was your last drink?
That was my last drink, yeah.
May the 5th? Sobriety date?
It is May 18th.
18th.
May 18th. Yeah, May 18th. Oh, okay. I was going to say, you're coming up on it.
Yeah, I am coming up on it. I'm, yeah, May 18th, 2015.
Now, I'm glad that dog was not active. If that dog was active, you might have a different date. You'd be taking care of that dog.
Yeah, exactly. I might still be taking care of that dog.
He just let you drink that all that guy's liquor, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's nice. Well, appreciate that intro. Shank, what's our topic?
Our topic today comes from an ebook, which is called Into Action, Stories from AA Grapevine. The ebook. In case you didn't know that there are ebooks from the Grapevine, I also did not know that until I looked this up. So there you go. This collection of grapevine stories shows the many ways members work the program of AA, written by men and women, young and old, with different lengths of sobriety. The articles in this book highlight how members practice the 12 steps, use our literature and slogans, and get into service, sponsorship, and fellowship. The stories demonstrate the various ways members get active in AA to stay sober, carry the message, and live rich and rewarding sober lives.
Ooh. Rich and
Interesting.
rewarding.
Rich and rewarding. I'm still waiting on the living rich situation, but I guess more will be revealed.
Rich in spirit.
So what I would like to know from you guys, is what was your initial understanding of what being in action in AA is? Maybe when you were first getting sober, first couple of years, kind of what was your understanding of what being in action was, Nick?
So initially it was the whole 90 meetings in 90 days. And as I spoke to how I got here, that just didn't ring true for me. So at first it was going to meetings. And then when that failed, it was getting in the big book with a sponsor, getting into my inventory, actively being of service. Like, I don't really separate service and recovery. I think it's all the same, you know, like our book says, it's that this is an altruistic movement, you know, altruistic organization. And that just rings true for me.
What about you, Jerry?
You know what I was, the very first thing I was told to do was pray. When that guy, I don't know why that just hit me, but when that guy came into the detox and made a 12-step call on me, he basically told me to go back to the room, and I think he said, he says, get down on your knees and say a prayer and ask for help. And he basically kind of tabled that with, doesn't matter if you believe or not believe, you're sitting in here in a detox and suicide watch wearing a funny blue outfit. You got nothing to lose, so go try it. So I guess that was the first kind of action I took. But after that, I took steps. You know, I did my first fifth step, or the first fifth step. I was about 5 or 6 weeks sober and started making amends at about 8 weeks sober. So looking back on it, was doing what our books suggest. But I also did other things, right? I went to meetings. I went to a lot of meetings. We make fun of the term 90 and 90. But you know what? If you can go to 90 and 90, do it. It's not going to kill you. It might mean you don't have any life, but most of us don't when we first get here. So I went to meetings. I immediately, was told to help people in halfway houses, give them rides. I was one of the few young people that had driver's license. I did that.
Good for you.
I know. Yeah, that pisses people off when you say that. I don't, it shouldn't. I got involved with sit up and clean up and going out for food and coffee, and was immediately taken or drugged to like detoxes, and I was sober about 3 months when I went in my first prison. So those are the type of things that I did to get into action early on. Now, Shank, did you
Well, I was also only 3 months sober when I went into my first prison.
Yeah, but you went for a little different reason than I did.
Wasn't taking an
Yeah,
AA meeting in there.
I think the judge put that on you, didn't he?
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know what my initial understanding of or thoughts about AA were. You know, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in a treatment center. And that was great. Like, I knew that's where I needed to be. But there was all this other information that I can't remember now. I'm sure it was fine about drugs, alcohol, what they do in your body, what they do to your brain. And all that was fine. Like, I don't know. I remember thinking it was very interesting. But when I got back into Raleigh and I went to an AA meeting, I didn't really, I didn't have a chance really to think of what being in action was. Like, to me, everything in Alcoholics Anonymous was doing something that I didn't want to do, or I didn't know how to do, or I felt really, I don't know, insecure about doing. A woman who at that time was already an old timer picked me up. She said, "Hey, I'm picking you up and we're going to the meeting. I'm picking you up at 5." The meeting didn't start until 7, and I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I'm just getting out of treatment. Maybe my family wants to see me. She's like, "Well, nah, I'm just gonna pick you up at 5." Like, and then she talked to me about what AA is and what it isn't. And, so I think that the first actions for me were just doing what I was told to do, doing what was asked of me, not questioning it. I did question it a lot. I mean, I've always kind of had an attitude problem in that way where I just like, I want to know why. But it was just a couple months in that I had been told enough times that being in action in AA was like I was always supposed to be trying to help others, and that was non-negotiable. I was told, well, you don't get to stay sober and not help others. So you may go on to the bitter end. You may not take a drink, but you will be a dry drunk and you will probably be miserable. So, well, make your choice, I guess.
I still question if I need to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've never stopped doing it. I just still question it.
Yeah.
So I guess a question would be, has anything changed over time since we've all been sober for a little while now? Does
Something I
into
think is
action.
interesting is now it's just a working part of my schedule, my life, my day, my mind. Like, it is not a question if I'm going to go to my home group directly after work, which means 5 o'clock, help set up, go out to eat, go to the meeting, stay for a little while after, maybe help clean up. That's just what I do. So I do, it has it changed? Sure. If people call, ask me to help them, I'm gonna help them. Like, it's not something that I have to sit and really ponder about what action am I gonna take today. It's things that are just built into my daily life now.
Yeah. Nick, has it changed for you any?
The program's the same, right? Doing the step work. Have I changed around? I mean, I'm more active in it, I'll tell you that. I did have the experience of I had that spiritual awakening. I no longer think about alcohol. I'm a recovered alcoholic because of the steps, right? I no longer have that obsession around alcohol. However, I did ease off on the meetings and the step work and everything once AA got good, or once my life got good, excuse me. And I had to get in enough pain in sobriety and just going crazy before I realized that, I mean, I'm a real alcoholic. Like, I have to do all this work all the time. And I got active in service, so where it's changed a lot for me, not only do I answer those questions at night, and meditate and carry the message to suffering alcoholics, that could be anywhere too. Like, the emphasis on the newcomer. Of course, the new people are important, but I think there's a lot of people that are suffering with plenty of time in Alcoholics Anonymous. So we get the opportunity as recovered members that are practicing all these principles to help carry the message to any suffering alcoholic. But I got active in service as well, general service, I should say. I love my 12-step work, right? Like, there's nothing better than sitting down with another alcoholic and seeing that light click and in their head. But well, I'll never reach as many as like a CPC panel, going into a college or a high school, and carrying the message to thousands of people, where we create non-alcoholic friends. I think we're falling short and stuff like that these days. You know, a lot, I'm included, right? For a long time, I sit in a meeting waiting for the newcomer to show up and ask me to be a sponsor, not paying attention to the fact that the book says when we approach. You know, I did that for a while. I sat and I was like wondering why I didn't have any sponsors. And an old friend of mine was like, you know, you got to go talk to him.
Right.
it
helps.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guys that helped me out in the beginning, my first sponsor, they, you know, they're amazing guys. But it's grown and I now have sponsorship that more or less calls me on my stuff all the time. My sponsors, very active and helps me see where I fall short all the time, you know, and even to this day, I can still be extremely selfish and self-righteous and think I know it all. So I still need the steps, you know, I still need to take inventory. I still need to admit when I'm wrong. I still need to, not work on my character defects, but continue to meditate and ask God, you know, for that guidance and for that help.
Not much has changed for me. I'm still trying to help people, still going into prisons, detoxes, praying. And hopefully we'll not get complacent, Shank. What's your next question for us?
Well, so Nick kind of brought it up a little bit, but how has being sponsoring others in AA changed your spiritual growth, encouraged it?
Being sponsored definitely helps, but sponsoring others, I got to say, has probably been the biggest growth for me. I mean, first off, I can't be asking guys to do stuff that I'm not doing. And I don't know, there's just nothing like it. I think that's why we can't professionalize AA, right? There's nothing like sitting down with another individual and going through that book. Man, it's tough sometimes to see, you know, when I'm doing it, I've had many opportunities to go through a fifth step and you can see the light click in some, and sometimes it doesn't, you know, and it's just still shows that I'm not in charge, right? I'm here to guide on what I've done and what I continue to do. I've got sponsees that are extremely active with just a few months sober, and they're, you know, active and they're doing the public information stuff. They're GSRs and they've got sponsees and they're, you know, doing all the stuff. And then I've got some that are still playing the victim, you know, and it's tough, you know, cause there's only so much I can point out. And God's really got to take over at that point just got to take over in that point. But being sponsored, man, it's a necessity for myself. You know, I've actually met quite a few people that are like, well, you know, I don't really need a sponsor. You know, I've been through the steps. That just doesn't ring true for me. You know, I can easily justify my own, you know, my own anger. I can easily get complacent, you know, I can. And I need guidance around that. You know, I take my inventory regularly, and you know, I have to go back to the columns often, you know, and when I've got something that hits me hard and I, you know, act out of character, or whatever you want to call it. And I like to have somebody else go over that with me. You know, that's just where I'm at. I like to be able to run that by somebody else. I feel like I give a lot of good advice, but I don't always take it for myself.
So it's right.
Kind of good to have that sponsorship.
Yeah, one of the things about being sponsored for me, I mean, obviously early on a sponsor helped me take the steps and helped me, you know, make amends, gave me good direction on making amends and just how to apply principles in your life. But Nick, you said earlier, I know Shank's this way. I mean, I don't like being told what to do, and I don't like taking direction from anybody. I'm rebellious, and I don't think rules apply to me. and I can just do what I want to do is kind of my just general attitude. And for some reason, when I got sober, that shifted a little bit just towards like a sponsor and some people in AA. And so one of the things that's really helped me with being sponsored is I actually have come to appreciate having somebody to talk to and actually being open to receive their guidance. I'm not a guy whose sponsor runs his life. I mean, I know there's people in AA that do that, and my sponsor's never run my life, and I've never tried to run anybody else's life. But I do appreciate having somebody to talk to about stuff, and then actually being open to hearing what they say, and in most cases taking the guidance or the suggestion that's given to me. That's been it's been helpful to me, but it's also been comforting, just knowing that that you got somebody that's willing to listen and willing to help out. And I think sponsoring people, I do have the experience quite often. Well, when I'm working with somebody and I kind of give them suggestions, I always ask myself, well, am I actually doing this? And it's always kind of kept me, active and doing spiritual activities. But it's vitally important to help people and to sponsor people just because it keeps things, fresh and current, and it keeps me out of my head helping other people. And I don't it for me it's a constant reminder of where I've been and where I can go back to if I stop doing certain things. So
Well, I definitely tried to run some people's lives there for a while.
well, sure, we've all tried, yeah.
And there's nothing more evident than, there are some women that have been in and out of AA for years and years, longer than I've been around and sober. And, every time one of them kind of comes back around and is like, well, just sponsor me again. I have to really, talk to my sponsor about that and pray about it. And I think what I have learned over the years is, I don't even really like the term sponsor, sponsee, those things anymore. Like, I just try to help people. And a lot of times when I'm helping people, it's not necessarily taking them through the book. Like there's women that come around that I've tried to help. I've tried to take them through the book and like I've acted in ways that I shouldn't. There's someone that I tried to help for years that I would be on the phone just screaming at her, just like, oh my God, like why are we doing the same thing over and over and over? And I've just learned that I may not be the one who can help everyone, help them go through the book, but I can go to meetings with these people. I can explain my experience to them. I can guide them to someone else to sponsor them, to take them through the book. And that's not to say that I don't help and take people through the book. I absolutely do, but I'm just not so egotistical anymore that I think I can help every person that walks in my home group and that I'm the only one that can help them, lead them to God. And I don't know that I was necessarily really thinking about it in that way. But if someone would get a different, I'd be like, oh, well, I asked someone else to help me. Like, thank you. I'd be like, I can't believe they would ask her. Like, I mean, come on. I have service positions. I'm on our state convention committee. I do prison work. Like, who's better than me to help people? So I definitely think that spiritually, I have grown leaps and bounds from when I walked in the door of AA, and it's been through, someone that is very direct, and maybe a little harsh with me. Like sponsors for me have typically been women that are willing to say, like, no, you're out of line. That's incorrect. That sounds horrible, what you just told me you did. How are you going to clean that up? Because I also, can kind of think that I'm justified in doing or saying things. So I think spiritually I've grown a lot. I think I frequently say I don't believe that I should be given a gold star for the things that I don't say, that I just like keep in my brain. But sometimes that's when I realize how much I've grown spiritually. Maybe I shouldn't be thinking these things at all, but I am. And the fact that I'm not saying them, to me, I'm pretty impressed sometimes. Like that is spiritual growth, and that is not of me because when I was drinking in my first few years sober, I was really quick to let you know that I had some jokes.
What's your next question, Shank?
Is there a particular step that's helped you stay in action in your sobriety?
Not a particular one. I guess if I boiled it down, probably step 11. Because I'm that guy too, right? I can identify with that. Self-righteous, I think I'm right, this and that. And it is until I look at that stuff. So, I've had days where I don't know what to, okay, this is kind of a silly one, but I was at a job site and somebody had buried a wire, did something, something small, but we couldn't find the wire, and the cabinet guy was there, and I started barking at him about it. The tile guys had finished the backsplash, this and that, and we're at the point where electrician's trying to find the wires buried behind the box. I started treating this guy like crap, and I didn't even realize it until I sat down at night and reviewed my day. And then I was able. So sometimes it takes 11 for me to take. I need to do a step 11 in order to take step 10. And it also keeps me on point with like, what am I doing with working with others? Because 10, 11, 12 are my, the maintenance steps that help me stay in this thing, and that sometimes will bring me back to four and five, really. If you break it down, I get back into the columns, and then leads me back to, nine. And anyhow, so step 11 has probably been the biggest impact for me. Those meditation periods, trying to stay with God. And I'm definitely not perfect. However, that's probably been the biggest, the particular step that keeps me in action.
Yeah, 11, huh? So the chapter Into Action in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the instructions. It's 5 through 11. Is that right? Yeah. That's interesting. And then 12 is working with others. I mean, when you asked the question, I was thinking my immediately I think of step 12. But I guess it actually is 10, 11, and 12 if I think about it, because that's where I continue to, look at myself and turn to God for help and other people, and then go to help other folks. But I would say for me it's 12 that, and I try to carry the message, and I think there's a hidden thing in step 12 that we don't talk about where it says practice principles. Is that what it says? Something like that? Practice principles in all our affairs? Huh? Yeah, so I've always kind of looked at that as a kind of an extension of step 6 and 7, in that I'm trying to walk away from defects and shortcomings and practice an actual principle and try to live in that. I find that if I truly I'm trying to get rid of self, and I think that that's my problem, then staying involved in other people's lives and trying to help them and being available for that is kind of what keeps me into action, and not thinking it's all about me. But I'm the self-righteous king, and it may not always look like it, but I'm thinking
Hey, you met your match, bro. You met your match.
If you all would just get on board with me and do what I've done, everything would be different and be okay. I mean, God knows. Why can't y'all just see that? Shank, what about you?
Well, I think probably early on it was probably making amends, helped me stay in action because the first time that I really went through the steps, I was incarcerated and I really had this delusion that I was not going to have to work all of the steps as they were written. You don't understand. If you had the life that I had, you would have drank the way that I drank. If you were now incarcerated the way that I am, you wouldn't want to write those letters either and have them stamped by the prison. So there was a lot of, I'm different, I'm unique, poor, pitiful me, this isn't fair. Luckily I was told like, hey, it says right here in the book that like we see people as soon as we can. You can write letters. There are a lot of things you can do. If you're not willing to do it, I'll find someone else to help. And I did think that was a little bit harsh because I was writing letters to my sponsor. I'm like, well, golly, like I just get no special accommodations here. But given all of that, that really set the foundation of my sobriety where I would be willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, to help other people, to I did not ever want to go back into a prison facility. And, now I've been doing that for several years. And I think that the ninth step really helped me stay in action of remembering like all of the harm that I caused and everything that I was trying to clean up. Because once I got sober for a little while, especially, once I got out of prison, I was just like, well, I cleaned up most of it and I've been gone for a while. And like, I just want to live my life and put it all behind me and not have to deal with it anymore. And fortunately for me, like, it was not just my sponsor, it was a lot of people around me saying, like, hey, like, you don't get to just coast on through and not complete the steps and not help others. So initially it was probably making amends, and beyond that, I would say the 12th step, 10, 11, 12, kind of like you guys, just being willing to reach my hand out, go places I don't want to go, talk to people I don't want to talk to, leave earlier, stay later, which is just a working part of my life now.
Well, you were a group project, weren't you, Shane?
I was a group project.
I can identify with that.
I still am, like
You still are, that's for sure.
I talk to a lot of people know what's going on. I don't subscribe to the service sponsor, unity sponsor, whatever, but there are so many people that have held positions before me that I talk to. I'm like, am I on track here? Does this sound right? What the heck's going on? I mean, I will survey the land here and figure out what I'm supposed to be doing, or if I'm on track. So,
But you're still my service sponsor, right?
oh yeah, I mean, I'm your service sponsor. I just don't have or need
All
one.
right. Okay, I got you. Thank you. All right. Let's let's move on to meeting shrapnel, Shank.
All right,
What you got
meeting
for us?
shrapnel, our segment of lore, myth, and sayings frequently heard in AA. Our first meeting shrapnel
Scrapnel.
that we're either going to keep or scrap is a member in good standing. So this would be like when someone is, if you look up a talk from me from probably 2015. From the podium, I would say, Susie, I'm an alcoholic and I'm a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's awesome.
What do y'all think about that?
Wow. It's funny. I never really heard that until so I borrowed some guidelines from another home group to kind of get ours going. And that is being used as far as being a voting member, showing up to business meeting, being active in the home group. However, now like kind of thinking about it and reading it and hearing it out loud, I'm definitely not a fan of that saying. Like, but there are no musts, right? Like, mm-hmm. you right. have to work the steps, right? I mean, that's like, we, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has no must. And so, yeah, it's kind of terrible when you think about it. I mean, I am an active member, and I guess I could say I'm a member in good standing.
Uh-huh.
Do I need to say that out loud? You know, that's kind of terrible. So,
well, and that's the thing. Shouldn't your actions show that, right? Into action.
Yes,
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I thought Nick was going to go the other way with it there for a minute. I was like, man, he likes it. I've also heard it said when people will like introduce somebody.
Mm. Yeah.
Like if you're introducing a speaker, they'll say, hey, this is, you know, Jimmy, and he's a member in good standing. And I mean, so how do they grade that? I mean,
here's the judgmental person in me is they'll introduce a speaker and say that. And I'm like, I know this person well. And they haven't been to a meeting in 6 months. Like, what is a member in good standing?
Right.
So I used to love this, though. I loved it when people said it about me. I loved saying it about other people. I loved introducing people as a member in good standing. You just, where we are, Nick, people say it a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's said a lot.
Yeah.
You know what we should do? We should write an agenda item for the conference and send it to the trustees committee and see if we can't get a checklist.
Yeah.
Maybe
how to be a member in good standing.
Maybe they could put it on the Grapevine app and we could have a checklist of stuff. Matter of fact, they kind of already have that, don't they?
They kind of do.
Your spiritual maintenance. Maintenance.
What's it called? Daily maintenance, I think.
Something like that. So.
Not one.
Yeah, maybe we get them to put it in a pamphlet, a little checklist. If you're in good standing. I don't like it. I'm gonna scrap it. Nick.
Yep.
Scrap.
Scrap.
All right, it's out of here. I'm scrapping it.
Right.
Our next meeting, Shrapnel, is grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. In the same vein, I think, when people are sharing in a meeting or maybe telling their story, qualifying, whatever. What do y'all think about this one?
Not always. I mean, I don't know, you know. I guess I can't say that I hear that too much either. But yeah, I'm definitely not always grateful to be here and grateful to be sober. I don't know. I'm if I want to be honest, I have days just like everybody else. If somebody's always grateful to be here and grateful to be sober, good for them. sounds awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I heard a meeting one time, this guy was like, I no longer, you know, have resentments. I no longer have bad thoughts about people. And I just could not identify with that.
Yeah. Wow.
I was like, I don't know. Man. I mean, call me a real alcoholic, but I mean, I got steps to help me with all that stuff. But I mean, yeah. Nope.
I think that there was a time for me similar to a member in good standing where I thought that I was always supposed to be grateful to be an alcoholic, to be sober, to be in the rooms, to be able to do anything, to wake up every day. And like, if I had a bad day or a bad thought or was just like, man, you know, I gotta go to AA the rest of my freaking life. Then I was like doing something inherently wrong. You know, there was a time in my sobriety that I thought that because I was hearing people speak and share in meetings about how they got sober and everything's amazing. All their consequences went away. They got a brand new car. They bought a house. They go golfing. They just do whatever they want. And I'm like, well, that's very clearly already not my experience. So I think that that's kind of where that stems for me too, where I'm just like, at this point, I'm just like, Alcoholics Anonymous is a huge part of my life. It's taught me, my home group specifically has taught me how to show up, just make this a working part of my mind and my life, and not to question it, not to be like, well, I don't feel like going to the meeting tonight, so I'm not going to go. But it doesn't mean I'm always grateful about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to be sober. You too. I mean, I just...
Well, it also kind of makes me think when... So maybe you've heard this one, Nick, where we are also, no matter what the person reads in the meeting, it will be like, thank you so much for that reading. And it could be something that, you know, it's just they read the steps, you know, and it's like, thank you so much. I love that reading. And I'm just
thanks for that reading.
Okay.
Yeah, I think some people think they're supposed to feel this way all the time, and they're supposed to say it even when they don't feel it. And it's like, but I've never used it. Now I am
Are
guilty
you sure?
of this one. No, I got a different version that I've stopped using, but I did okay. use. I used to say it's good to be here and it's good to be sober.
No, you say it's good to be in my right mind. It's good
no,
to be here and it's good to be in my right mind.
That's a different version.
You
I used
just
to say
that like yesterday.
I did, but I used to say it's good to be here and it's good to be sober.
Okay.
Now, I didn't say it at every share. I just said it when I felt that way. But even that's dumber than hell. I mean, it's like, it's not anything that I would say today. I think it's got to go.
All right. You going to keep it or scrap it?
I'm scrapping it.
Nick?
Go for it.
It's out of here.
All right.
All right, and our last meeting shrapnel for today is suit up and show up.
Surprise!
What do y'all think about this one?
I don't know, man. I guess the only reason I own a suit is because Alcoholics Anonymous.
Uh-huh.
I am not a downtown New York kind of guy. I don't even know how to answer that.
I think this reminds me of like pull yourself up by your bootstraps a little bit.
It is
yeah, I get
like
it.
That.
I mean, and truthfully, I mean, I showed up when I didn't want to show up. But I can't tell you like if I comb my hair or not. I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you guys got to say about that. I don't really have an opinion on it, I guess.
Well, it's one of those that, I mean, I kind of get the intent of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you know, clean up and get here, right? Mm-hmm. Or just show up and that's half the battle type thing. I'm sure I have probably said this.
Mm-hmm.
Not in recent history, but at some point. And I know it's been told, people have used it on me, like, hey, suit up and show up.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's one of those like cute little treatment center kind of one-off sayings. It's just kind of throwaway. There's not a whole lot of depth or meaning to it. I wouldn't use it today. I would just tell somebody, hey, meet me at the meeting at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're afraid to go to work, hey, just try to get there, right? Go to work. Or suit up and show up.
Well,
Shank?
I'm deeply offended at the suit part.
Right, see?
Inherently male.
It is. Oh. It's masculine gender. We should rewrite it. Dress up. Was it should dress up? Even that's too feminine.
Right. I don't always wear a dress to speak. Sometimes I wear slacks, which that's actually very controversial too. Anyway, I don't really care about the. You know, I think what I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is like regardless of how I feel, I should still show up and keep my commitments and try to help others, you know. So, you know, I go to some meetings that are downtown, and I mean, you know, there are homeless people walking in and out of the bathroom, like being a little chaotic. It's a downtown meeting, so it's, you know, it's not a high class meeting, if you will, but the sobriety, they are not suiting up. The sobriety there is amazing, you know. So like, I don't know, suit up and show up. It's probably not for me. I say we scrap it.
Got it,
Nick.
Go for it. I mean, I've heard it both ways. You know, I've heard a guy say, you know, you need to suit up to show, you know, new people that you can have that ability. And then I've heard the opposite, where a guy was like, don't suit up because you're just an average alcohol. You know, you're just an average guy. You're not better than.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't, like I said, I mean, you're good with scrapping. I'm not, I wouldn't be a guy.
I'm going to look like a recovered alcoholic. That's for sure. But that may just mean that I look clean. I've brushed my teeth, maybe. I don't know. Like,
the happiest guy I've ever, you know, I ever met was a butcher. I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you have to even wash your hands to be a recovered alcoholic, right?
So. That's right.
That's right. But Nick, so listen, today when you go to that prison,
I see my suit, don't you?
We want you to do this when you get in there. You just tell them, guys, I suited up and showed up today. I'm a member in good standing. I'm just grateful to be sober and grateful to be here. Yeah, let it rip. No, I think we should scrap it.
It's out of here.
All right.
I just keep hearing the noise.
It's gone. Well, Nick, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience with us.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
Yeah, it's been good to have you. Good to have you. If you're out there listening, remember, get into action and be free.
Freedom.
Thanks for listening. If you have a comment, suggestion, or just need help, you can email Shank and Wayne at freedom@alcoholicsalive.com. Remember, we're recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but we do not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do we get paid. Join us next week for another great episode.